This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place, whether you're in the mood for a New Orleans-style kickoff to the holidays, an arts commemoration of a Global Health Day, or news of a popular music genre that has its day in academia. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. French Quarter Festivals, Inc. launches its 34th annual Christmas New Orleans-style celebration with Kermit Ruffin's Ringing in the Season. The month-long celebration will close the city's tricentennial festivities. French Quarter Festivals, Inc. CEO Emily Madero joins us. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Things are moving so fast. The holidays are here and you have dozens of events in store for us. Tell us about this collaboration between French Quarter Festivals, Inc. and the New Orleans Tourism and Marketing Corporation.
Well, every year we are delighted to celebrate all the ways in which we celebrate the holidays here in New Orleans. French Quarter Festivals, Inc. produces free holiday concerts at the Cathedral and St. Augustine Church. And this year we're doing things a little bit differently. So we have partnered with our friends and neighbors at the French Market Corporation. And we'll be kicking off the holiday season in New Orleans with a special holiday concert with Kermit Ruffins and the Roots of Music. And that will be combined with the tree lighting. So it's going to be a really fun, family-friendly event. It's a beautiful way to enjoy the landscape of New Orleans out on the beautifully renovated Moonwalk. So we'll have the Roots of Music and Kermit Ruffins, followed by a special holiday tree lighting for the French Market Corporation tree. And then, of course, to top it all off, we'll have fireworks on the riverfront.
Oh, my. So take us through the season. What else is on tap as we celebrate the Yuletide?
Well, we are thrilled to have concerts at St. Augustine Church. We're going to be kicking it off with Philip Manuel. That will be on the 1st of December. All of our holiday concerts at St. Augustine will be at 4 p.m. We'll also have holiday concerts throughout the month at the Cathedral. We have the Iguanas, which is something that I'm really excited about this year. Every time we try to shake it up a little bit with, of course, our traditional New Orleans jazz. This year we'll have a little bit of a Latin flavor, gospel. We have a special parking deal at the Omni Royal Orleans. So you can, no matter where you live in the city, come down to the French Quarter, enjoy a free concert, and then have a beignet or walk along the river or enjoy a Revillon meal. That was a traditional meal that was celebrated on Christmas Eve after midnight mass. And we do it a little bit differently now. So it's inspired by the same flavors and menu items that you might have. We have Revillon-inspired brunch and cocktail menus throughout the city, as well as full dinner menus. One of my favorite ways to celebrate the holidays is with the bonfires we have. December 1st, you can go across the river, take the ferry, and enjoy the bonfires on Algiers Point, which are always magical. We have Celebration in the Oaks, which is a really wonderful way to celebrate with the whole family. The zoo is lit up this year, which is another fun new event. We'll also have our friends with Patio Planners in Jackson Square, so you can come and sing along with all of the caroling.
It's a caroling and also a candlelit ceremony?
Yes. The Jackson Square will be lit up with individual candles and voices singing holiday carols.
So this is happening in venues in and around the city all month long.
Yes, it kicks off Friday. And as you know, the holiday season doesn't end until the carnival season begins on January 6th.
And you close out with...
Well, we'll have the Funny 40s, of course, beginning the carnival season and sort of closing out the 2018 holiday season and ringing in the 2019 carnival season. You can find all this information in a printed holiday guide that's distributed throughout the city. All of the restaurants and coffee shops will have them. It has a full calendar all throughout December of all the special events. It has menus for the Revillon meals, and it's a wonderful way to explore all the events that are happening throughout December in New Orleans.
So this begins November 30th and pretty much runs through 12th night?
Yes.
That's a lot of events.
It is a lot of events.
French Quarter Festivals, Inc., CEO Emily Madero. Thanks.
Thank you.
The 34th annual Christmas New Orleans-style celebration kicks off Friday, November 30th, with Kermit Ruffin's free performance in Washington Artillery Park. More info is online at fqfi.org. World AIDS Day is Saturday. In commemoration of the Global Health Day, the Storyville Collective with Crescent Care is gearing up for a benefit reading of Tony Kushner's Pulitzer Prize and Tony Award-winning play, Angels in America, Millennium Approaches. Artistic director Michael McKelvey is here with actor Augustin Carrero and director John Proctor. Welcome.
Thanks for having us, Diane.
This work is part one of a two-part play by Tony Kushner examining AIDS and homosexuality in America. It premiered 27 years ago. Where are we now on the subject more than a quarter century later?
This is John Proctor. I'm 50 this year, and in 1986, I was graduating high school, and I remember being young and going to clubs as a gay man and dancing and looking for life and freedom and everything, and that was the height of the AIDS crisis. So it was strange to go out and see people that I would see at the club, and then the next week, someone would have died, or someone would have been hospitalized, or people in hazmat suits would have gone to the apartment building across the street. That was utterly terrifying. And the reality that Kushner is writing about in this play is something that I actually lived through. We've now, as a culture, moved specifically dealing with the AIDS crisis. It's become something else. How the world deals with it is differently. It's treatable with drugs. There's things that you can do to prevent the contracting or to limit the exposure to the AIDS disease. The world has changed, and people don't talk about it the way it was talked about in 1986. So the world that this play is talking about is absolutely visceral and real to me in a way that I'm not sure it is to a much younger generation.
And this is Augustine, and I'm speaking sort of with a different hat this time than I'm used to, because I'm also a representative of Crescent Care and No AIDS Task Force. And one of the things that's important to know about is when we look at this play in a world that is ravaged by the AIDS crisis, we also have to reflect on the state of HIV in New Orleans, because we remain one of the top three cities in the United States for new HIV infections. And so it still is very much a real problem today, especially here in the New Orleans community.
Now, Michael, why did you choose to commemorate World AIDS Day with this particular work?
John brought the idea to me, and I'm about the same age as John, and I remember when I was an undergraduate at Cal State Northridge, I served on the AIDS Speakers Bureau, where we were actually out going and helping to train people, help them with their knowledge about what the HIV virus was and things like this. When John brought this to me, it made me really reflect upon where I've come, how many people I've lost in my life being in the entertainment industry. And I think especially after we just got done doing the Laramie Project, all my senses are heightened so much about how we're treating each other, how we are taking care of our community. And this just seemed like the logical next step for the company.
So how does the play Angels in America, Millennium Approaches unfold? Who are the angels?
I'm going to leave the answer to that question to Tony Kushner, who answers it in the context of the play itself. It's more than just a play about AIDS. It's about identity. It's about people who are searching for connection. It's about people who are trying to reach out and touch each other. It's about identity and feeling lost. And I think it's still relevant in the world that we live in today, in a world that's so politically divided. When in our elections, you've got 50% voting one way, of the voting populace voting one way, and 50% voting another way. And with the resurgence of so many fringe identities in America, there's a sense of loss. So, in the words of Tony Kushner, I'll leave this to Augustine.
Like the spiritualists, try to use that stuff. Are you enlightened? Are you centered, channeled, whatever? This reaching out for a spiritual past in a country where no indigenous spirits exist, only the Indians, I mean the Native American spirits, and we killed them off, so there are no gods here, no ghosts and spirits in America. There are no angels in America, no spiritual past, no racial past. There's only the political.
That's what Tony Kushner had to say 27 years ago about Angels in America.
Is there a through storyline in the production?
There are several through storylines. It deals with Harper and Joe, who are a Mormon couple who has moved to a big city and they feel lost. It deals with Pryor and Lewis, and Pryor has contracted AIDS and he's dying, and Lewis is not coping well with that, so he's running away. It deals with Joe and Harper's mom, who's coming to find them. And the best part is that throughout the play, there are like knells, like a bell going off that says an angel is coming. And the angel's not coming necessarily to save them. The angel is coming. And I think that's a harbinger or a moment of change that they're talking about. But no one has defined, at least in the first half, what that change is.
As a director, John, what do you find most challenging in this work?
The biggest challenge I have as a director is conducting this symphony of voices and balancing the objectives of the actors, if you will.
And what about for you, Michael?
It's reminding people about this work and how important this work is and how relevant it is today in our current climate and getting the word out to them about, yes, this is a reading, but it's very important for us to pay attention to the text of Mr. Kushner, that it still rings true today of what's going on.
You have several local actors supporting the reading. Who else is in the cast?
We've got Matt Reed, Jessica Podwell, Tulane professor Amy Chafee will be joining us, Michael Newcomer, his wife Elizabeth Elkins Newcomer, Hannah Kent, who is a Tulane student, John Broder, the director of the Big Easy Awards, a lot of local names who are, in fact, joining us for this production.
And can you tell us a little bit about the playwright Tony Kushner and his approach to the subject?
He's from Louisiana. Tony Kushner is politically active. I met him in Madison, Wisconsin a couple of years ago, right after the Bush presidency, just before Obama became president. He is so invested in politics, and he thinks about his world, and he thinks about his responsibility as an artist, and he thinks about where he fits in with a community. He balances his identities as a gay man, as a playwright, as a person of Jewish descent. All of his political identities are constantly at the forefront of his art and his politics.
This work has received worldwide acclaim. What is your hope going forward in the continuing fight against AIDS?
Our world is changing so rapidly because of things like the internet, because of things like politics, because communication has moved forward so fast. I think about a play like Angels in America as something that continues to be relevant, that's alive and still functioning. We risk losing the building blocks that got us here. We risk losing things to history. I don't believe this play has fallen out of fashion. I believe this play is still relevant, just as relevant today as it was when it was written. The thing is, there are so many new things that come in with the speed of communication that it's grown to. We as artists have to recover, go back, invest, and delve in the great works of art that shape who and what we are today.
Without the voices like Tony Kushner and without the people on the front lines like Belize, the nurse in this play, who was so compassionate to people, even in spite of the fear of death, we wouldn't be where we are today. So we mustn't forget where we came from in this fight against HIV as we move into the, hopefully, what are the stages of ending HIV permanently.
Directors Michael McKelvey, John Proctor, and actor Agustin Carrero, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you, Diane.
Thanks.
The Storyville Collective with Crescent Care present a benefit reading of Tony Kushner's Angels in America, Millennium Approaches, in commemoration of World AIDS Day. It will take place at the First Unitarian Universalist Church of New Orleans, 5212 South Claiborne Avenue, Friday, November 30th. All proceeds will support the No AIDS Task Force, a division of Crescent Care. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Can you believe hip-hop is 45? And what's more, the music genre and culture born in this nation's inner cities is going to college. Loyola University New Orleans is launching a new undergraduate degree next fall in urban and electronic music production. This cutting-edge program is the first of its kind in the country. New Orleans-based Grammy Award-winning hip-hop producer and Loyola faculty member Lavelle U.P. Cooper is here with Kate Duncan, chair of the university's popular and commercial music program. Welcome and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I understand this program was a long time in the making. How did it come to be, and how are you honoring hip-hop's long history?
I guess you could say it's 40-plus years in the making. It came to be because there was a need for it. We had no real academia aspect of learning how to do what we did, so we literally had to learn on the streets and learn and wing it. And so now you got people like myself and better who have put this together, and we culminated a great program to say, okay, let's really do this the right way and give the people like ourselves, but, you know, the younger us, the opportunities that we never had, the technical know-how, the book sense, so they don't have to just do like we did and go out and kind of just see what happens.
Tell me more about the undergraduate degree, Kate, and how it was developed.
What it includes is a heavy dose of all of the musicality aspects. They're going to have theory. They're going to learn piano. They're going to have private lessons. They're also going to get a huge dose of technology. So they're going to be immersed in the studios from day one. They're going to be working with producers. They're going to be learning and being certified on Pro Tools, all of the necessary skills technically that they need, as well as the business aspect. So we've kind of taken a conglomeration of that performance side, as well as understanding how to operate yourself as a walking, talking business through marketing, through management, all of that through the lens of the music industry.
Now, this is a Bachelor of Science degree?
That's correct. Yeah.
And why do you think it took so long for someone to do this?
It's a tricky tightrope walk. Any degree in the performing arts, I think, is. It's unique because not only do we have all of the courses that I was talking about, but we combine it with that undergirding of the liberal arts education that the Jesuit system is providing through Loyola. So it may have just taken a long time to tweak it and get it right and to look at some examples that we've learned from our music industry studies program, as well as our popular and commercial music program, too.
When it comes to hip hop and rap, some stars have come out of Loyola in recent years.
That's true. Yeah. We've seen Gerald, but he's better known as G-Eazy. We've seen a number of successes. Christoph Anderson is a wonderful touring producer, DJ, beatmaker. We've seen a couple of rising stars recently, too, as well.
Great rising stars. You have students like Dave State of Mind. He jumped stage with Kendrick Lamar, and Kendrick gave him a chance to have a moment on his set recently. You have Ayo Timmy. You have Sam. And they're getting a lot of love. These kids are having 200,000 plays on Spotify and cracking the top 10 on iTunes. They're definitely doing their thing and making great records.
You know, it seems like it was just yesterday that I was listening to the Sugar Hill Gang's Rapper's Delight and The Breaks by Curtis Blow.
Right.
How has the genre evolved since the 1970s?
Oh, man, that's a whole class right there. The genre has evolved from being strictly like party music and moving from party music to being... right after Rapper's Delight, you had Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five who did The Message. And that's where hip-hop really started talking about our life instead of just, these are the breaks. And it was more of a party record. It became more of like, let me tell you our story. Let me tell you the message. Let me tell you about broken glass everywhere. People, you know, on the corner, like, they just don't care. I can't take the noise. I can't take, you know, I can't take the smell. They started painting pictures of what the life was like for urban inner city people. And so that evolved. And then we reached a point, you know, where we had the Afrocentric age, where you had Tribe Called Quest, De La Soul, Jungle Brothers, people like that. And you had Public Enemy in them, just making their, you know, more like the original Black Lives Matter movement. you know, and then you had, I mean, it just keeps going. And we reached what we call the Ice Age. And that's really what I joke about is being where New Orleans came into the picture at, because that's where the bling came at. That's where the shininess, the I want better for myself. I want my lifestyle to be better than it is. So the whole point was just striving for better things, getting the better jewelry and making yourself feel more like the citizen you wanted to be and the person you wanted to be, not just some guy, some outcast that we felt we were looked at as.
Now, Lavelle, tell us a little bit about how you were first attracted to hip hop and how you came full circle to being a producer who is now giving back to a younger generation.
Well, I started out as a gospel singer. We're just going to let that go. And it reached a point in the 80s where I felt like I was being limited by just singing gospel. There was more topics I wanted to talk about. And that's where hip hop really came into my life. That was the musical art form that was growing at that time. And so I just fell kind of right into it in the mid 80s.
And you were a kid at the time.
Yeah, I was... Oh, man, what was I, like 9, 8, 7, something like that? And so, you know.
And you were singing gospel at that young age?
My uncle plays for the Zion Harmonizers and the Mississippi Mass Choir. The Williams Brothers are my cousins. Christian Brothers was my grandfather and them. I mean, my whole family is gospel. Adonia Cooper is my mother who sings. I'm surrounded by gospel. And I've never stopped having that love. And I still produce gospel, actually. You know, it's just like when hip-hop calls you, it just calls you. It was like the perfect shoe fit, you know? So,
did you ever see yourself teaching a course like this, a degree program at a university?
Not at all. The ironic part is, I mean, I graduated from Grambling State University, and I am a certified teacher. I taught for Orleans Parish at John Mack for a while, and then I taught at Craig Elementary. And I had to stop because I was so engulfed in music, I couldn't do both anymore. I reached a point in my career where I was able to come back, and Snyder and some of the students were asking me, John Snyder, who's the chair of the program, asked me to come and speak a couple of times to his classes, to some of the students that wanted me to come and work with them because I had been working, you know, I did like, yeah, I worked with Lil Wayne, I worked with, you know, some Lauryn Hill, Wu-Tang, a bunch of other artists. And so the good thing about the students is they were like, well, how did you do this? What did you do? How did you get your kick to sound like that? How did you get your 808s to sound like that? How do you make your song sound ready for radio? How do you do this? How do you do that? And so Snyder kept asking me to come in and teach classes and talk to the students and talk to students. And then, you know, one day he offered me a job. And I was confused by the concept of job because I hadn't held a quote-unquote job. You know, I work for record labels under contract. But he was like, you want a job? And I was like, I don't know what that means. One of my things was I was like, I just don't want to have to stop doing what I do. He said, we don't want you to stop. We want you to just bring it to Loyola. And when he said that to me, I was like, oh, okay, I can do that. That's how I transitioned to Loyola from being the on-the-road traveling music producer working with everybody in New York and L.A. and Atlanta, and then just being able to be home in New Orleans and say, I'm not going anywhere. You guys come here to me, and we'll work here. Most of these artists enjoy working with the students. And that's the great thing about it, because they all went through what I went through. They all, you know, it's a common struggle. So when you're given the opportunity to actually show and talk to younger people and kind of give them some inkling of how to really get in this business and how to really survive in this business and how to make money from it, how to create a career, what are all the jobs in it. When you're able to actually show and talk to kids about that, that makes it all worth it.
The student that is going to be a hard worker and is going to be dedicated to that internal drive that they have, that's the kid that we love to work with.
Yes.
Grammy Award-winning hip-hop producer and Loyola faculty member Lavelle U.P. Cooper and Kate Duncan, chair of the university's popular and commercial music program. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Diane.
Thank you.
More info on Loyola University New Orleans' Urban and Electronic Music Production degree is online at loyno.edu. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.